Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Listen Up with Jim Potts, only on LA Talk Radio.
Jim Potts back on the air, and as always, thank you so much for listening to me on your Sunday afternoon or your Sunday evening, depending on whether or not you're in the East Coast or the West Coast. Well, hey, we've had another exciting week out there, I guess, but we got Christmas right around the corner, so what do I want to tell people? Look, be careful. Remember last week that I put on the I put it out there about being secure in your homes because people will steal things. I got a message earlier from a person that mentioned the fact that they've had things taken from their door and strange people walking up to the doors and things of that nature. So hey, be on guard. Christmas is right around the corner, a few days from now. Last minute Christmas shopping. Please keep in mind to be aware of your surroundings and what you're doing, etc. Two shows ago, we put out there about being careful when you're out there shopping and some safeguards. So for those of you that are listening for the first time, go back to those two shows. So last week and the week before has some great safety tips for you as well. All right. Okay, today we're going to be talking about some things that have to do with the airport security, why we have that, et cetera. A lot of safety tips that I'm going to give out there today regarding the airports and traveling domestically and also internationally as well. So stand by for that. But before we get into that, I want to read my emails off so we can cover some of that. Okay, first one. Jim, I know you don't do the politics thing, but I want to bring to your attention that the Senate just passed legislation to provide grants to help secure faith-based organizations such as synagogues. And it's signed by Heyman from Brooklyn, New York. Well, that is true. I don't get into the politics thing, for those of you especially that are new to the show. And for those of you who may not have heard about this, it's true that is what's going on now is that the Senate did pass legislation authorizing $75 million annually, for years 2020 to 2024 for the Department of Homeland Security and their nonprofit security grant program. So there's a nonprofit security grant program out there which is going to provide grants to nonprofits and faith-based organizations to help secure their facilities against a potential terrorist attack. Now, you know, the sad part about it is why do we have to even do this? It's a shame. Now, this is for synagogues and nonprofits only. All right? So that's a lot of money that's being devoted to that. I'm not sure that I understand about other organizations that are not going to be able to have the same type of grants available to them. But they basically it was a bipartisan bill, which is good news. It's called the Protecting Faith-Based and Nonprofit Organizations from Terrorism Act. And of the $75 million total, $50 million will be available for nonprofits located within high-risk urban areas. And the remaining $25 million will be available for organizations that fall outside those areas. Now, I thought that was interesting because you're talking about high-risk urban areas. You know, a lot of what goes on sometimes is not really in the urban areas. To me, it's outside the urban areas. But, hey, I'll do my fact-checking on that as well. So I'm not sure. I mean, some of the synagogues are located right in the city, so I get that, you know. But I think the majority of them, I'm not sure. Some of these churches and synagogues are on the outskirts. But under the legislation, the funding may be used for target hardening activities, training for personnel, and other appropriate activity as defined by the FEMA administrator. So FEMA is the one that's going to be overseeing this. But I think that's good. At least the government's heading in a direction. Now, I find it very sad that the synagogues, churches, and mosques are facing the threat of violence at the hands of these extremists. You know, it really is a shame because, from my perspective, one of the reasons why I'm on the air is because we need to continue to try to eradicate all forms of extremism and try our best to counter domestic terrorisms. And now at least this bill is going to help at least a part of our community, so to speak. A target hardening, by the way, means that we're basically setting up security measures is what that is. And they'll take a look at it. They'll do site assessments. They'll make a determination as to what's the best security measures that's available. If anybody has any comments, as usual, you can always call me at 818-602-4929. That's 818-602-4929. And before I forget, you can also, if you want to get on our email blast, so to speak, regarding upcoming topics, just text POTS Associates and text that to 22828 and enter your email address. So text POTS Associates to 22828, enter your email address, and then on Thursday or Friday, you'll get what the upcoming topics for the show is. So at any rate, you know, I do really think that this is a good thing. I think in recent years, we've witnessed so much of a tragic rise in threats and attacks on synagogues, churches, and mosques, and houses of worship in general throughout the country, that I think this is a good thing. So yeah, Hyman, I had heard about it, so I've updated the listeners as well. I think that that's one thing we've been able to do, you know, in Washington, D.C., that was a bipartisan situation, so that was a good thing, I thought. Okay, next email. Jim, I woke up this morning to see that federal agents arrested over 200 MS-13 gang members from different parts of the country. It made my Christmas season more delightful. Keep speaking up for law enforcement, Jim. They're doing a great job. Mary Ann from Long Island, New York. Yeah, for those of you who have not tuned in yet to hear about that, it's true. You know, the federal authorities have arrested more than 230 suspected MS-13 gang members. It was in New York, Baltimore, and listen to this also, El Salvador. Okay, so it was south of the border as well. There was a reason for that, and you know, this operation against this Hispanic gang was a result of more than 2 years of investigations, you guys, and even the United States Drug Agency and the DEA officials and prosecutors all worked together on this. So it wasn't just on the federal side; it was also on the local side where law enforcement all got together. I've spoken before about MS-13, and they are, you know, polluting our society in so many different reasons and creating domestic terrorism. They've murdered people, all kinds of things. And I will tell you that out of the 230, because I don't know if the listeners know the details, but more out of the 230 people arrested, 96 were from Long Island, New York, which has been a stronghold of MS-13 for the longest time, because actually MS-13 really started off in New York. It was 2 years in terms of the investigation. So they found that these guys had attempted to build an arsenal of brutality on the East Coast. That was their directive. They were going to try and take over the East Coast with this. And now with all of these arrests, that's going to curtail a lot of that. Plus, we were able to get some valuable insight into the gang's goals of recruitment, expansion, and some of their violence and their rules. So that part is always good anytime you can learn something about how a group operates. It really helps. And I need to correct myself. I think I told you MS-13 started in New York, but it didn't. It really originated in Los Angeles. But as what happened out here was law enforcement out here really cracked down on them in the 1990s. And many of the members were deported to El Salvador, Guatemala, and Honduras. So now, however, they've gained power and making Northern Central America one of the deadliest regions in the world. So, you know, I'm always talking about where to travel to and from and how to be careful with that. So for those of you that are traveling in those regions, please understand that it's a dangerous region and be extremely careful. I know people have family members down there, et cetera. I get that. But while you're traveling, just be careful. That's all. Okay, Jim, you and your son Jamal discuss violent video games and how detrimental they might be for a variety of reasons. I have to tell you, this issue reaches way back to 1976 with the video game Death Race. It was said that that was a violent game. I guess the times have not changed, but they keep making them more realistic. You know, we need to monitor, like you said, and monitor our kids. John from Philadelphia. Yeah, you know, John, we did talk about it. And I've actually gotten some other inquiries about that as well. And I'm going to share a little bit more information now because Every time I get an email, I like to make sure that I'm also investigating a little bit deeper, going deeper and things of that nature. Now, that one about the death race, that's true. That was in 1976. Now, this goes way back. And back then, it did incorporate aspects of violence, and the mechanics of it, such as killing an enemy with a weapon, using explosives to destroy a structure, or engaging in dangerous vehicle races. Now, back then, that was considered violent. We look at it that now and say, well, now we probably look back on that one and say it's no big deal. But I can tell you that even way back then, it led to concerns that minors who played those video games would be influenced by the violence, and also that it would alter their real-life behavior. So even though for the times, although, John, this doesn't sound like a big deal about a video game now for what that offered, back then it was the same kind of concerns that we have now. And when Jamal and I were on the air last week, we were talking about the ratings. So they do have the ratings. So a typical, what we call ESRB rating, okay, it's a content rating. So you can go to www.esrb.org and check out the ratings and the level of the different ratings. So basically is what happened to counteract the increase in complaints and attempts at legislation, the gaming industry created an entertainment software rating board, and that's what that ESRB means. So let me just repeat that. ESRB is Entertainment Software Rating Board, and that was created in 1994. Now, that was prompted by a 1993 congressional hearing, if you could believe that, over the violence in the video game Mortal Kombat. So now I know some of you out there remember Mortal Kombat, all right? So Mortal Kombat is the one that created a situation where Congress jumped into the middle of the fray, basically, and threatened to pass legislation that would mandate a rating system if the industry did not take its own steps. So that's why the ESRB was created in 94. So, here's the government doing what they're supposed to do, telling them that they better step up, and if they don't, then Congress would. Now, I'm going to tell you something. The more I got into this, this is a much bigger deal, because I'll just relate this to California, because California introduced a law way back in the early 2000s where they were trying to ban the sale of violent video games to anyone under the age 18 and require clear labeling beyond the existing ESRB rating system. And as what they did, California, what the legislators were doing, they were talking about a $1,000 fine for each infraction, Now, it's where they got a little bit into trouble was the definition, because they defined it as violent video games, all right? So now when they defined it violent video games, that topic was too broad, and it's what happened was it created a situation where the United States Supreme Court had to jump into the middle of the fray. Now, I'm not going to get into the heavy part of that, but basically is what happened was that this is a situation where lawsuits were being filed, and to make a long story short, the district court in California, this thing went all the way up, guys. It, like I said, it's a lot to go into, to the point where even Arnold Schwarzenegger, when he was governor, he was fighting this to make sure about being able to vigorously defend the law that California was creating. So I thought that was very interesting. And basically is what happened was that the California got shot down on this by the Ninth Court Circuit of Appeals that said no, you can't have these laws. So from there, it actually still went up further on appeal, and it came up on appeal after Schwarzenegger was out of office and Jerry Brown took over. When Jerry Brown took over, they changed the name of the lawsuit because of the fact that it was a new governor in California, basically. And it ended up being Brown versus the entertainment industry or something like that it was called. So this thing really got deep and heavy to the point where the United States Supreme Court actually ended up ruling on it. And now in California is what they said, it was too overbroad. You can't have a broad statement. What's the definition of a violent game, so to speak? So is what happened was they turned around and said, can't do it. It was actually a 7-2 opinion which struck down the California law as unconstitutional on the basis of the First and 14th Amendments. All right? So it was first held that video games qualify for First Amendment protection. Again, I'm not trying to get too deep into it, but is what they recommended and is what California did was that they were able to set out the age in which a person could buy. That's why in California, and there was 11 other states, by the way, that joined with California on this. So there was 11 other states at that time that fought, you know, this issue. As a result of that decision, basically, now when you go to buy these video games for your kids, you'll notice that it says it has to be 18 and older can purchase the games only. And that was the reason why. So 18 and older was the result of all the litigation. So when we were on the show and we were talking about the fact how we thought that this was problematic, we talked about some things about it. It's not a new issue. It was actually an old issue. Now, I want to just take one more minute, John, because I was actually looking through the list and I actually was able to obtain a list of all of the different video games going back to that 1976. And I have to tell you, I was simply amazed at some of the ones that they claimed were, in fact, considered violent. And for some of you out there, this will probably be a little bit, you know, hilarious for you, in my opinion. But, you know, Death Race, we already talked about. They had another one in 1982, okay, 1982 called Custer's Revenge. Now, I remember that one. I didn't buy it, but it was by Atari, all right, Atari. And that game depicted a crudely rendered General Custer dodging arrows to reach a naked Native American woman tied to a cactus. For surviving, he was allowed to have sex with her and receive points for doing so. Now, obviously, that led to a controversy whether he was raping her or if she participated willingly. So that gives you an idea, you know, about, you know, how extreme some of these were. Then they had another one called Punch-Out. Now, I remember, because even Jamal and I think we're talking on the show about Nintendo regarding these boxers. You know, it was Mike Tyson's Punch-Out. And they've got that listed here because they said it was too violent. And I'm like, Mike Tyson's Punch-Out is true. Jamal and I and Jermaine, we used to stay up late playing that game. But it was amazing to go back and look at some of these. And I have them back by dates. And I'm not going to go over all of them now. If I have time at the end, I'll give you a couple more. But right now, Mortal Kombat, blood, violence, and gore. I mean, these, you know, when you think about it, some of these, you know, now that we're looking at it a little bit harder, some of these are probably, you know, they probably were too violent. I'm going to stop with this last one real quick. And like I said at the end, if I have any time, I'll come back to it. But listen to this one. In 2004, they came out with a video game called JFK Reloaded. JFK Reloaded. This puts the player in the role of Lee Harvey Oswald as he assassinates President John F. Kennedy. I mean, you got to be kidding me. Criticized for his controversial content and recreating the assassination was condemned by a number of people. And of course, well, for those of you who, you know, some of the young people may not know, but Ted Kennedy, his brother, okay, obviously condemned it because he found it to be despicable. How in the world are you going to have a video game that showed the President of the United States being assassinated and you got to be Lee Harvey Oswald, who's the one that assassinated him? Now, for some of you that are in my age group, I mean, we remember the Kennedy assassination. Those were sad times. How anybody could come up with a video game depicting that, I have absolutely no idea. But at any rate, I just wanted to at least mention that since John had written to me about it and talked about Death Race. I did some more research on it. And now I gave you, because I think Jamal and I did talk about the fact that you had to be 18 years old to buy it, but we didn't get into the depth of that. And now I've given you the depth of why, you know, how it ended up being 18 years of age, okay? Anyway, again, if anybody has any comments, you're welcome to call 818-602-4929. But, you know, it always goes back to the same thing. We talk about all these things with the internet. radicalizing our children, or our children spending so much time with this violence. I don't know. I'm not a psychologist. Do your research out there. But these kind of things are definitely out there for folks. There's no two ways about it. Okay. Now, look, the primary thing that I wanted to talk to about, because people write to me and they ask me about the airlines as an example. There's a lot of things going on with the airlines, and people don't quite understand, you know, the safety of it and everything. And at one time we had, you know, these, you know, hijackings, and, you know, some of you probably are too young to remember the hijackings, but we had those as well. And over the years, you know, it was really a global terror threat, and where they would get on the airlines and they would hijack the airlines and want to go to another country or hold them, you know, the people on the airline hostage, things of that nature. At any rate, so when you look at this and you say, okay, you know, how safe are we? Well, airline security, we know about TSA, but there's a lot of people that are not very confident in terms of exactly, you know, how safe we really are, you know, from terrorists. Now, I will say, you know, there's a difference, in my opinion, between domestic terrorism and international terrorism. Some of the airports, I think I mentioned on some shows months ago about how the airport security, when I was talking about TSA, might be a little bit different than overseas. But, you know, because I get emails on this, you know, but people flying into our country, those airports in those other countries are going through strict security measures that they're required to go through. Now, what I'm going to be talking about here are some other things for you in terms of safety measures and things of that nature. Okay, so that's what we're going to be looking at today. And, you know, this is the time for it because people are actually planning their trips for next year. I know we're planning on some trips next year that might take us overseas. But they look at everything, you know. At any rate, so let's go through some things because I want you to fully understand that if you are planning trips, you need to know some of this information. Because, as we all know, terrorist attacks often take place without any warning. And I try to put the message out there that United States citizens should always maintain a high level of vigilance and take appropriate proactive steps to increase their security awareness when traveling. And as you know, I also, you know, talk about that not just for, you know, when you're traveling, but even when you're, you know, moving around and going to concerts and things of that nature. This past week, we did a number of active shooter trainings with a number of organizations that had great questions. So we know that people are really concerned about these things, no doubt about it. Now, you know, one of the things that I would always do is, you know, encourage you to take the appropriate proactive steps to increase your security awareness. You have to do it. You have to understand that there's places you can go also. So I would encourage everybody to read the country information pages and travel advisories. And the website that you can go to is called travel.state.gov. Okay, I'll give that to you again. Travel.state.gov before planning a trip. All right, you can go there. It'll give you a lot of information. In addition, prior to departing the U.S., look, you need to enroll, in my opinion. I talked about this a year or so ago. You need to enroll in the Smart Traveler Enrollment Program. All right? It's called STEP. And you can receive security messages about terrorist threats or security incidents. And while abroad, you can actually monitor the local news and be aware of the contact information for the nearest U.S. embassy or consulate. You should always know that when you're traveling abroad. Okay? I remember a few years ago we were getting ready to go to Spain, and that's exactly what we did. You know, we followed the protocols. We made our calls. We did that. We actually ended up canceling our trip because the State Department had warned United States citizens not to travel at that time. And that was because of the Ebola. You guys might remember the Ebola outbreak. But you always have to check. And like I said, at a minimum, you can always check. Now, here's the other thing. If you get ready to travel, you've already booked your tickets, et cetera, and now something happens. If you call the State Department and you find out the State Department is issuing warnings, hey, the airlines will refund your ticket. That's what they did for us, okay, because of the fact that they had already had it noted that the State Department had out a warning advising not to travel. So keep that in mind. So don't just think that you're going to lose your money, okay, because you're not. Because I'm going to tell you, again, when you're traveling like this, there are groups out there, you know, that they were inspired by other organizations with their intent on attacking us, and they'll try to attack us no matter where we are, all right? So even that means that even when you are outside of the country, because they know it's hard for them to get at American citizens here, so that means when you're outside of the country, it's more of a feather in their cap because you're a United States citizen, all right? Now, keep in mind, they may use conventional or non-conventional weapons to strike us or to strike our interests wherever we are. But many are increasingly using less sophisticated methods to attack, all right? And they're always targeting crowds. You've heard me say that time and time again, all right? And they will use edge weapons, pistols, vehicles. They'll do any of those kind of things. So when you're traveling, okay, overseas, you know, especially, and this doesn't negate you being aware of these things here, you know, but a lot of you have heard it. We do a lot of active shooter training, and we talk about these things in the active shooter training as well. We do it for businesses, associations, all over the place. It doesn't matter. But extremists are increasingly assaulting soft targets. Now, just keep in mind, a soft target, and this is one of the things we always talk about, is a large crowd of people, no law enforcement. So they will attack high-profile public events like sporting contests, political rallies, demonstrations, you know, things around the holidays, so celebratory, you know, gatherings like what happened at that wedding. I think it was in Australia, one of those places, and they attacked the wedding party and killed over 200 people. No, it wasn't actually Australia, but I think it was a Middle Eastern country or something at that time. I'm trying to remember. But anyway, they'll attack things like large weddings as well. Why? Because there's a large gathering, and you don't, generally speaking, have a, you know, security, you know, like law enforcement there. Now, when you're traveling outside of the country, especially, I've already told you about in the country, so watch the hotels, the clubs that you go to, and watch restaurants, places of worships, parks, all right? We heard about a park that happened, you know, a woman got killed in a park not too long ago here. You know, I tell people, look, when you're at these parks and you're jogging early in the morning or in the evening, you know, it's dark out there. You know, you got to be careful, all right? I know you're into the health thing and everything, but you got to do this during the daylight, all right? Shopping malls when you're overseas, same thing as here, all right? And anything that has to do with tourism, watch it, all right? Because what do you have? Large groups of people going from one tourist attraction to the other. Now, I'm going to give you some recommendations maybe that can help you avoid becoming a target of opportunity. Now, I'm going to tell you, these precautions may provide some degree of protection and can serve as a practical and psychological deterrent to the would-be terrorists. All right? So, you know, I'm going to give you a list of different categories and things. And, you know, if you can't write it all down now, you know all of the shows are archived. You can always go back, you know, and listen to them. So the first heading, so to speak, about airports and air travel, schedule direct flights if you can, if possible, and avoid stops in high-risk airports or areas. All right? Country information pages often highlight such locations. So if you go online, because remember, you can get everything offline these days. So if you go online, you know, look to see where you're traveling, get the country information, and do your research and Google it. Now, if you're using like these travel agencies, these travel agents are probably going to know a lot of this information also. Everybody doesn't use travel agents because you could just go and look some of the stuff up yourself. All right? But if you have some questions, even though you don't book with that person, they may think you're going to book with them. You could ask them the questions. Okay? So do it that way also. All right? The other thing I want you to understand is that when you're traveling over there, minimize the time spent in public areas of an airport. Move promptly from the check-in counter to the security screening section to gain entry to the secured area of an airport. And remember, upon arrival, leave the airport as soon as possible. Get out of there. Arrival areas are typically less secure than departure zones. So remember down in Florida about a year and a half ago, the baggage claim area, what happened? A guy pulled a gun out of his backpack and started shooting people. All right. So you get your bag, leave. All right. Get out. Always keep an eye out. When you're in the airports, you hear it over the loudspeaker. Keep an eye out for abandoned packages or briefcases and anything that looks suspicious. Nobody should be leaving their belongings, you know, unguarded, so to speak. So keep an eye out for those kind of things. And if you see something like that, it looks suspicious. People have called in and said, if you see something, say something. Let security, let the airport authorities know and get out of the area as quickly as possible, because you don't want to get caught up in anything. All right? And look, and to the greatest extent possible, always avoid drawing attention to yourself. All right? They say that because you don't ever want to be a target. Somebody may start with you. You never know. All right? Now, let's talk about public venues. Public venues. All right? When possible, avoid or minimize time spent in those soft target areas that I've already told you about. And when you're in those locations, be alert for anything that looks suspicious. Hey, it's the middle of the summer, and here's a guy with a long trench coat on. All right? That's going to look suspicious. All right? Recognize that Western-branded venues or Western-like facilities may be attractive targets for terrorists. What do I mean by that? They know where all of the Americans hang out. All right? So that would be a target because, again, if they can't get you here, all right, they'll get you there where there might be less security. Okay? Like I said, always report suspicious activities and individuals. All right? And report it to the local police. You know, it never hurts that if you're going to be staying in a city like Paris, where there's been a lot of issues, or some of these other places, why not know the 911, you know, number, so to speak, for the local authorities? You should always know that and know the consulates. Remember I told you to do that. The other thing is, if you do get caught up, remember the three words that we always try to impress upon people. Run, hide, and fight. Okay, that's the rule. So during a terrorist attack, keep those words in mind. Run, hide, and fight. All right? During a terrorist attack or similar incident. And hey, whenever possible, get out of the area as soon as you can. If retreat is not an option, conceal yourself from anybody that might be trying to harm you. And if necessary, yell and fight off the attacker. Be a reluctant victim. You've heard me talk about that as well. Okay? So, and those are public venues. And again, you can use those same tips for that, whether you're here or whether you're overseas. It does not matter. Okay? All right. Let's talk about some other categories here. All right? Let's talk about taxi cabs, all right, and personal vehicles. And we've talked about, I think it was last week or the week before, we talked about Uber and all the sexual assaults and things of that nature. But look, taxi cabs and personal vehicles. Look, if you're by yourself, always possibly try to travel with others. And I'm talking, again, I'm still trying to focus on overseas. Carry a charged cellular cell phone with you at all times. And that's whether you're here or there, quite frankly. Inform friends, family, and colleagues of your departure and your arrivals. When my sons and I travel, and my wife and I travel, we always give them the flight number, when it's going to board, the itinerary. So we'll take a picture of that itinerary, and we'll send it to each other. You do the same thing. Remember that. I don't care whether you're traveling domestically or internationally. When you get that itinerary, take a picture of it and send it to more than one person. Send it to family and friends. Let them know about your departure and arrivals. And also business associations. Doesn't matter. All right? Now, when it comes to a taxi cab, hey, sometimes in some of these airports, especially overseas, they'll have a guy walk up to you and say, hey, do you want a taxi? Hey, you select your taxi at random. Don't fall for that. Okay? Same thing even here. Now, sometimes here, the taxis have to stay in a certain line, and you got to take the next taxi up. And that's a little bit different from when it's organized. That's organized. That's a little bit different. I remember that first movie called Taken with Liam Neeson, I think is how you pronounce his last name. And his daughter and her friend got into a taxi, and a guy jumped in and wanted to share the taxi with them, etc. Hey, you know what? You select your taxi cab at random. And if there's just two of you, don't let anybody else in there to share your tax. It's you two. All right? And by the way, here's another thing. Whether it's here or over there, if you don't know what a gypsy taxi is one where it's not like the yellow cab situation. It's just an individual that has his own car that may walk up to you and say, hey, I'm a taxi also. I charge less than everybody else. Look, I understand you're trying to save money, but safety's got to come first. So don't be jumping in those gypsy cabs. All right, you want to jump into one that's clearly marked, it's got an identification number, and when you get in that cab, you got the person's picture, the whole nine yards, okay? Hey, take a picture of that even, all right? Now, again, I'm not trying to make you paranoid. I'm trying to make you safe, all right? Taxis, Ubers, or Uber-like vehicles, they should, you know, they've got these photo licenses right there. So you take a picture of it, okay, and make sure that the picture of that individual is the same person that's driving that individual. And you can always record the license plates if you want to go that far. Now, what about rental vehicles or personal vehicles? Hey, periodically inspect the exterior of the vehicle for suspicious items or marks. Look around, see what's going on. When we rent vehicles, we always check the vehicle out. All right? You do the same thing. Drive with the car windows closed whenever possible. All right? That just gives you additional layer of protection. All right? You don't want anybody reaching into a cab, reaching in through a window, none of those kind of things, okay? So when you're in there, secure yourself. The door is locked, the windows are up, all right? If that cab is worth anything, you know that the air conditioner is going to be on. If it's hot, if it's cold, it should be up anyway because the heater is on, all right? So you don't want anybody reaching in as well. Now, let's talk about hotels. Look at the evacuation plan and shelter-in-place plans after you get to your hotel room. Know what the evacuation route is. Take a look at it. In the event that something happens, you want to be able to follow that plan. You'll already know what to do. If everybody's panicking, it'll be harder to do. Now, what I tell people in my active shooter class is that the evacuation plan could say go to the southeast corner of the parking lot. All right? Well, understand something, that there's terrorists out there, and what they've done, they'll set off a little fire in the trash can. The smoke goes up, sets off the alarm. Everybody looks at the evacuation plan, and it says go to the southeast corner of the parking lot. The problem is that that's where they have the terrorists will have their major device, which means they're drawing everybody out of the hotel right there to that one spot. My advice, don't go to that one spot. The hotel wants you to go there because of the fact that they want to do a head count. You can always call them later and say, we're just fine, all right? Now, be sure of the identity of visitors before opening the door to your hotel room. Don't meet strangers at your hotel room or an unknown or remote location. Strangers are strangers, all right? They're strangers. Sometimes when people go on vacation, I get it, especially if you go by yourself, you meet people, you're trying to meet people. But understand, ladies, you need to be more secure. All right, guys, it may be a little bit different, but strangers are strangers. You don't necessarily have to let them know where your hotel room is. All right, you can always meet them in the lobby area, whatever. Okay, or places well lit or well attended. All right, and when you're at a hotel, always refuse unexpected pay. You get some package at the hotel that you don't know anything about, don't even open it. All right, and report any kind of suspicious activity to the hotel's front desk or security office. Let them know something's going on. I saw somebody strange in the hall. I heard something strange going on. Let them know, because you never know what might be, you know, going on. Now, look, the other thing is that all the, like the hotels and all of that, they have police and security services. So, you know, during an emergency, just remember to follow the instructions from them, whatever that might be. Okay? So, now, one of the things I want you to understand about being going abroad, okay, that gives you some basic safety tips for those different areas, okay? All right. Now, look, when you're getting ready to travel, travel takes plans, all right? Now, I've given you when you're planning to travel and all of that, but let's stop and back up for a second, all right? So let's talk about your preparation to be ready. You got to think ahead. So when traveling or living outside the United States, Because sometimes people move the places for a while. Business reasons, personal reasons, whatever the case may be. So when you're traveling and living outside the United States, you got to prepare yourself for any type of potential crisis. So this is part of that as well. So you got to be informed before you go there. Okay, you've got to get on the internet. I mentioned a little bit of this earlier. Get on the internet. Read about it. Read about the place. And quite frankly, even here, if you're getting ready to move to some place you don't know about for business reasons, personal reasons, whatever the case may be, get on the internet. Learn about the area that you're going to be in. Learn about the country. Find out about their visa requirements and their local laws or their customs. But also equally as important, learn about their medical care, okay, and their medical care facilities. If something happens, you want to make sure, medically speaking, that you're going to be covered. Now, you can even buy medical insurance for when you're traveling abroad because your carrier here may not have a location where you're going. So find out about the medical facilities of where you're going. And like I said, there's medical. You can buy medical insurance short-term for while you're traveling. So if something does happen as a result of some attack or, you know, whatever the case may be, hell, you just may slip and fall. Okay, you're covered. This is what I'm talking about being, you know, prepared, all right? And always check the travel advisories, all right? Always check that, all right? And as I also told you, just as a reminder, make sure you know where the United States embassies are or the consulate, all right? They are available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So get that information from Washington, D.C. before you even go. Get their phone numbers, get their address, all right? That may be something that's critical for you, okay, because of an emergency. It doesn't just have to be a terrorist attack or something. It could be up from a lot of different perspectives, okay? A lot of different. And if you lose your, by the way, if you lose your passport or, you know, your traveling visa, whatever, you want to make sure, okay, that you know where these places are because they're going to be able to assist you, all right? Now, if you're going to be living abroad for any type of time, just make sure at your place you have at least 2 weeks' supply of food and water for each member of the household. So if you're going to be relocating to an area, okay, make sure you have that as well. Now, look, there's probably less of an issue with Europe with some of that as opposed to traveling to South and Central America. I know I have a client that goes, they've got some ranches, growing ranches down in South and Central America. They're always on guard for things because they, matter of fact, when they rent cars, they don't rent the big expensive cars or anything like that. They don't want to show themselves as being rich Americans or anything like that. So the older, more beat up vehicle they can get, they're happy. Make a long story short. Now, here's what I want you also to do. I want you to prepare an emergency kit for yourself, an emergency kit. Now, this is something that you prepare before you leave the country, all right? And that emergency kit, it could just be a small bag, okay, that you keep over your shoulder and make sure it goes across to the opposite shoulder so nobody can snatch it and run. Your emergency kit should show your passport, your birth certificates if need be, and this is for, like, if you're born over there or whatever the case may be. So, you know, don't forget that. You need that in there. If you have, you know, your birth certificates for children that are born overseas, et cetera. Also make sure you get local cash and currency because you may need some money. Okay, and some of that you can get before you even leave to go over there. And also, if you're going to a country and you don't speak the language, get yourself one of those little books. Some of them you can get these little flashcards with some basic things on there that have basic terms with translations, with just basic information even, all right? So just, and these days, you could probably get these little translators. They got these little portable translators and things of that nature as well. Because again, if something happens, you want to be able to communicate. See, people don't think about these things, all right? So don't forget that. Don't forget your medications if you're on medications, whatever the case may be. So you got this little emergency kit that has all of this information in there. Now, look, I'm not telling you to take something that looks like a suitcase for crying out loud. I'm talking about something that, you know, is equivalent to something like you could just put over your shoulder, you know, that's got this basic information in there. All right. And I also tell people, I've told people before, carry a dummy wallet in your pocket. So take all those expired credit cards or these cards that you get in the mail that says, hey, you qualify for $45,000. But it's all looks like credit cards and all of that. Hey, take that and put that in that fake wallet. So if somebody does try to rob you, all you do is hand them the fake wallet and they're off and running. They're not going to know until they get to wherever they're going that it's all expired stuff that they can't do anything with. Okay? So don't even argue with them. Give it to them. Let them go. All right? Okay. So this is all about being prepared. So you turn around. You create that. And most importantly, again, don't forget your medication. But I think one of the most important things is that passport. All right? And again, make sure you have your health certificate. So if you're traveling abroad, you make sure that your health for medical is covered. Either by, and these short-term policies are no big deal, by the way. They don't really cost that much. So just get that if you're going to be traveling. Okay. Now look, here's the other thing I want you to do. I want you to be connected. Keep a list of your emergency contacts handy and create a communication plan for reaching family and friends in the event of a crisis. Now I'm talking also about the people you're traveling with, as well as the people back home. Let them know where you're going. Give them the itinerary. Give them the telephone number for the hotel where you're staying in each of these different cities if you're moving about. All right? Stay connected. These days with the internet, you have means of communicating with people. You have cell phones you can communicate. All right? Now, just keep in mind that sometimes the phone lines can be affected during a crisis. All right? So communication sometimes might be kind of tough. All right? But when you can, be able to get something on the internet, if you can do any of that. All right? You want to always try to send messages as regularly as possible to let friends and family know how well you're doing. We've got friends that travel. They put stuff on Facebook. That they're sending back home. We're not really that much into Facebook, but we're texting our kids when we're away as an example. Hey, this is where we're going. This is where we're staying. Although they'll have that information beforehand. All right. That's what's important. Okay. Now, be safe. You got to have an exit strategy. Know how you'll get out of harm's way without needing to rely on assistance. All right. You always have to have a plan. Now, when we do our active shooter training, we talk about that all the time. You go into those restaurants over there, know where the exits are. You go into a mall over there, know where the exits are. Wherever you go when you're over there, know where the exits are if you go into these different places. All right? And remember something else. If you're out there with these tourist groups in the large crowds, or just even if you're on the street, don't walk toward the outside of the curb side of the street. Walk towards the inside because some of these people, as we always, you know, talk about with the active shooter training we do, is that these people are jumping the curbs and they're running people over. So walk toward the inside of the curb, not the outside of the curb. All right? Now, common sense will also tell you to follow the instructions from the local authorities, all right, about security and evacuations. It could save your life, so be smart about it, okay? Monitor local radio, television, and other sources for updates. Why is that? Situations can change very, very quickly, limiting the amount of time that you have to get out, okay? And again, look, this is not to make you paranoid about this stuff. And some of these tips I've given you, stuff you can use stateside as well, all right? But one of the things we're always talking about is how you need to be safe. And these are just some safety measures for you, all right? So, you know, don't, you know, just, you know, pass some of this by. It's important stuff. And if you're staying at a hotel, talk to the staff. Be sure you know about the hotel's emergency plan, all right, as an example. Doesn't hurt, all right? Doesn't hurt. Okay, listen. We are living in these different times. You know, the show in general is doing very well. We get a lot of positive feedback from people, and that's for a reason. I think, you know, people appreciate the fact that we reach out and we're keeping this narrative going. Those are sadly just the time. You know, on the news this morning, I heard about Chicago again, where Chicago had another 13 people killed at some party. I don't know what it is about Chicago. You keep hearing the same place over and over and over again about these kind of this kind of violence. And it's sad but true. We have a responsibility locally also for the community in which we live in. We've talked about this on the show before. Have these community-based organizations where people in the community band together and keep an eye on each other. You got to do it that way. And look, you got to get the law enforcement involved with this. And I know, you know, this is a big issue about law enforcement, police officers, you know, people saying they're afraid of police officers. Look, that's a bunch of nonsense. The reality is, I understand that sometimes some of these police officers make mistakes. But look, those are the small majority, small minority, okay, when it's all said and done. It's a small minority of police officers that make some of these, you know, bonehead errors. And yes, I'll call them bonehead errors, all right? Overall, they're really trying to help you. So, you know, reach out to them, embrace them, ask them for information, okay? If there's a problem in your neighborhood, you can always turn around and ask them to do patrol checks in your neighborhood. They're willing to do it, trust me. Reach out to them, and they will reach out to you. All right, you've been listening to Jim Potts on LA Talk Radio. It's time to close out the show. Be sure to join me next week. And if you like what you heard, do me a favor, spread the word. And again, our book is on Amazon doing very well. Just Google, go to Amazon and look up James William Potts. And the name of the book is Domestic Terrorism Safety Tips. All right, until next week, look, be aware, be vigilant, be safe. More importantly, be a reluctant victim. Until next time, guys.
You're listening to Listen Up with Jim Potts, only on LA Talk Radio.